Seth, it's a joy to have you on the Faithful Stewards podcast today. Thanks for giving us your afternoon to record a few episodes, and I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Having you on the podcast is exceptional for our listeners and those who have been following along with us so far, because we're going to take a little bit of a different direction because of your expertise and where you serve in ministry here at Countryside by dealing with how to practically shepherd those who are associated with your music ministry. So we're going to look at a shepherding role that you take as you oversee the music ministry here at Countryside. Now, before we get into the sort of heart of these episodes, you've been the music director at Countryside now for over 20 years.
Yes.
And I would love for you to give our listeners just sort of an overview of what the music ministry looks like here, particularly on the Lord's Day, but also what the music ministry entails during the week.
Sure. Yeah, so I've been here just shy of 25 years and seen the Lord do amazing things here, at growth in the church, but also in the music ministry from where it began and to the point where what basically exists now in the music ministry on a Sunday. We have three services on Sunday morning that are identical, and in each of those, musically, we have a choir and an orchestra that's supported with rhythm section, and our choir is just about 100 singers, and we have an orchestra that's just between 30 and 40, depending on the week, faithful volunteers in our church that serve every week. That's what a Sunday morning looks like. We also have a Sunday night service. And for that, we go a little more family style and smaller. We have a praise band, some guitars, drums. I lead from the keyboard with a few background vocals. But that's what a Sunday would look like with, again, a lot of volunteers serving. Beyond that, we have some midweek ministries like a children's choir, youth choir programs as well. Our children's choir, I want to say, we have about 200 kids now involved in that. We have three age-graded choirs, a kindergarten choir, a first and second grade choir, and then a third through fifth choir. And just a lot of kids at this church, as you can imagine. I think we're a church of about 2,000 people, attendance on a Sunday, and a lot of young families with kids. And we've always had a heart to have a generational mindset with our music ministry. And so from the first days I was here in 2001 when I started, children's choir was important to me to have. And so we began little by little growing those programs to what we see now. And more recently got the youth choir going in the last couple of years.
Yeah, so that's where we are as a church and music ministry as far as 2025 is concerned, right? That's
yeah.
A sort of a bird's eye look of where we are now. But you know, it hasn't always had that much breadth and depth, you know, since the time that you've been here. So maybe you could just give us a quick little sketch of how the Lord has worked and grown these particular ministries, and to see not only the Lord's faithfulness, but really the faithfulness of many Countrysiders through the years that have been, you know, alongside this ministry.
Sure. Yeah. So when I got here in 2001, the church was doing well, thriving. The music ministry had been run by a volunteer music guy who had a full-time job during the week. And little by little, as the church grew, they realized it was more than a volunteer could handle. And in the Lord's providence, that man, his company transferred him to another location. And the leadership of the church at that time said, we need to invest in a paid full-time music guy. And so I was the first full-time paid music guy for Countryside Bible Church. And when I arrived in 2001, they had a choir, they had a smaller group, an ensemble singing, but pretty basic on the instrumental support, just piano and another keyboard that would play some organ and string sounds. And then they had just begun to recruit volunteers in the church who played instruments, started doing a survey and getting some folks right as I got here. And so I was able to pick that up and carry that on and find out more and more and get more and more orchestra people involved in the church. And we started small, though. I want to say the choir was about 20, 25 singers. We had an ensemble of 10 or 12 singers, and that was basically the music ministry, very, very traditional, mostly hymns, a few newer choruses. They didn't use guitars and drums at the time, just, you know, that sort of feel. It felt like a Southern Baptist, Southern gospel kind of a church, and so I was able to come into that and add more and broaden the music palette. Little by little, we added more instruments. Mm-hmm. We began to add drums and guitars, as well as, as we began to add that, the Lord continued to bring people that had gifts of various instrumental gifts. And so we saw that grow as well as the choir continue to grow. And so, yeah, that's...
Yeah, no, it's wonderful to see the Lord's work. And, you know, I've been here since 2009, and just to see how the Lord has been using that ministry, but also continues to use it and grow it, and your faithfulness and many other countrysiders to it. It's just, again, it's a huge part of our church, and it's a wonderful component of our Lord's Day service. So I'm just grateful for your steadfastness and your faithfulness in the ministry. Well, in the future, we plan to have you back on the podcast, if you do well today, to talk about various aspects of the music ministry. But today, as I've already mentioned, I just want to focus on sort of the practical ins and outs of shepherding a music ministry. So here I'm thinking of ways that music directors can help their musicians and tech crew be better prepared and ready for the Lord's Day and other events that might take place on campus. So I'm thinking here of just talking about how to prioritize communication and administration, as well as using the available resources that you might have on campus or on site at your church. But before we start walking through sort of the outline of that and where we want to go, not every church is equal in terms of maybe the size of their choir or the amount of instruments in their orchestra or various AVL components that one church might have over the other. So could you just talk about how the things that we're going to discuss on these episodes, that the principles that really come out of them can really be embedded in sort of every church context?
Yeah, I think that's an important point to make, is the things that I want to communicate through these episodes crosses all styles of churches, large, small music ministries, because they're principles that our pastor frequently has said, the difference between good and great is in the details. And we're talking about detail work that a volunteer music director or a paid music director can do things ahead of time and work with people outside of the main services and events to help those things go better. If you just put in a little extra effort and help your people be more prepared. And part of this is because I've learned the hard way, and I've seen and worked with other churches that like to do last minute things and just wing it and assume everything is going to work when it's supposed to work and don't take some extra steps that would help avoid those catastrophes.
Sure.
And so that's part of this. And so these principles would apply no matter what the context is, but they're in an effort to raise the quality controls at your place so that it can be less distracting, more seamless. Everybody feels like they know what's going on and are prepared efficiently so that they can offer their best to the Lord in musical worship. And the congregation then is not distracted by things that could have been taken care of prior to the event. And so that's what these things are about.
Yeah, that's helpful. So it's not for sort of a legalistic sense of we want things to go well and perform well. You mentioned it right there, right? That it's ultimately faithfulness unto the Lord is what you're looking at, and even in the minor details.
Correct. Yeah, the scriptures again and again talk about us offering our best for the Lord, striving for excellence. Again, we will not be perfect in this life, but that doesn't mean we get lazy in our efforts. We give maximum effort. We want to strive for excellence in what we're doing. And so these kind of details, these principles that we're talking about on how to prepare for a service, hit that mark.
Yeah, that's great. And that's a great segue into where I want to begin, just in terms of preparing your team and what that looks like maybe throughout the week or even the weeks prior on preparing your team, all aspects of the music ministry on Sunday morning, and getting them ready to be able to perform the music and the instrumentation that is set aside for the Lord's Day. So let's just talk about some of these details. Let's begin with talking about sheet music. Now, sheet music is a big deal in the music world. So you tell me why that is. It's crucial to have a plan and to prepare for these things.
Yeah, so musicians mostly rely on actual sheet music that tells them what notes they're supposed to play. And for different instruments, that might look different based upon the instrument, especially when it comes to orchestra instruments. And so you want to give the effort to help purchase or gather up the right music for each of your players so that everybody is on the same page and playing the correct music. And it's not a hodgepodge of music that everybody brings in their own copy and their own version of a song, because there are enough different arrangements and musical versions of songs of the same song out there today that it's a risky move to just expect everybody to be bringing the same music. And so it's my responsibility that I take care of organizing a music library that has all of those files of what everybody's going to play. We keep it organized. We have it all labeled, which part, if it's a guitar versus a bass guitar versus a drum. We actually even label those specific words on the music, so that each time when we hand that music back out again, the next time we do the song, they are coming from the same music that they've already marked up with their notes that are unique to what the drummer might want to remind himself to do versus what the trumpet player would do or the guitarist would do. And so it's important to have sheet music that helps understand that. It minimizes the mistakes that can happen in a rehearsal when people have the wrong music, they have it in the wrong key, and so they're having to think about things called transposition to help it sound in the right key so everybody's playing the right notes together. And so this is detail work that I take the responsibility as the music leader. My players don't have to figure that out. I take the responsibility to get all that sheet music together ahead of time in my planning process, and then I send that music out to each of those players that's specific to what they're supposed to prepare. And an important anecdote here is I like to give that music ahead of time, days if not weeks ahead of time, knowing what's planned, so that they have time to prepare on their own at home, so that when we all get together in a rehearsal context, they're not for the first time seeing that music, reading that music, and we're trying to wonder why things aren't sounding the way they should, or stuff isn't correct on the music. We like to get ahead of that. And so that it's a personal thing, but I think it's proven that it's been a helpful thing for our players and for my music ministry here at the church.
So how many of the Lord's people are you responsible for? So when you're sending out sheet music, how many people is that going to?
Yeah, so in preparation for the orchestra that plays on a Sunday morning, we have between 30 and 40 players. And that's
why this is key.
This is key.
That it's we're all on the same page here, right?
Yes, and we're talking, we have the pianist and the organist who have their own copies of music that they mark up uniquely for how they would play their parts. Then we have the string section. We have violins, violas, cellos that each have their own music in their right key and clef that help them play the right music, and they're not having to guess or transpose from a different part. In our string section, we have winds, we have flute players, clarinet players, oboe players, sometimes bassoon for special events that all have unique music. Then we move into the brass section, the trumpets and the trombones and the French horn and the tuba. They all have unique parts. And this is every Sunday we have a variety of these instruments that help make the overall musical landscape. In addition, we have the percussion instruments. We have a couple of percussion players that play timpani and bells and cymbals. And again, each of those parts are unique to that instrument, and so they need the right music that matches what we're playing. And then lastly, we have guitars. We have acoustic, electric, bass guitar, as well as a drummer that plays. And typically they play from a lead sheet, but we like to reuse the same music that they would have marked up Again, I think I mentioned it earlier, that is the kind of notes when the guitar comes in, when they should pass it, not play a section, that the orchestra only is doing something, when the drummer comes in, things like how the song starts. Is the drummer going to do a count off for us all to know when to come in, or will I direct the introduction? And so by reusing the same music that they've already marked up once before, it's helpful and a better starting point for them to practice and remember, oh yeah, this is how that song goes.
Yeah, that's helpful. So I've seen you guys organizing the sheet music before. I, of course, can see it on Sunday mornings when everybody's flipping through the sheet music to the next song and those things. But I find it very helpful that they sort of have a running log of their own sheet music that they can constantly come back to whenever you guys are repeating a song. That's
correct.
That's amazing.
Yes, and we like to keep the music here in our library filed away, organized, rather than make a copy, they take it home, and then it gets tossed, and we have to start over again. The nice thing with copyright laws is as long as you've bought enough of the original music, you're entitled to keep those masters clean and untouched and make a copy from that. And those copies are what are given out, marked up, and then we refile those copies. But again, the masters are never getting messed with. In case a copy gets lost, we still have the master. And I know I'm going down a different vantage point, but what we learned many years ago was it's best to have all the masters in files that are untouched, a clean copy, and then we use multiple other copies that are what's given out to the, again, we have 6 or 8 violins on a given Sunday. We have multiple trumpet players, and so we make we buy enough masters to cover those copies that are used. And again, this is copyright laws are important, and we want people getting
want to be faithful.
Yes, we want to be faithful stewards, yeah. and pay those who make these original copies. We want to make sure they're getting their payments through the CCLI service. So I'm grateful for that, and so we want to be above reproach with that. But we don't like giving out masters, and we got burned a few times when a master got given out, got lost, and now we have to buy another master to replace that. So anyhow, that's a little tangent. But
no,
but the sheet music is very important to us. And one other thing I would say on that, and again, this goes back to when I first got started in music ministry right out of college. The first church I served at in Chicago, I came in on the heels of somebody that was very organized and had a good method in place, and they like to be planned out 3 weeks in advance, and they trained me that it's helpful for to not feel the urgency and rush of within the week I've got to come up with something this week because Sunday's coming. Musically, you can plan things a little more advance, and maybe at the last minute you might have to change a song or something, but for the most part, with how we plan our services, I like to be 3 weeks in advance for those Sunday morning. And partly I would say that's because we also use choir, and the choir sings special music things. And our choir typically can't learn a new song in 1 week and then sing it on Sunday. And so we are planning and working on things weeks in advance. And I'm assessing when certain songs are going to be ready for a Sunday. And then I like to plan and work themes around that special music in addition to what the pastor is preaching through on the series. And then those 3 weeks in advance also give our orchestra players the time to prepare and know what's coming, and not within a few days before a Sunday find out this is what we're doing, and they have a busy weekend. They had, you know, already we're going to be out of town for a wedding, and they're having to scramble to learn their part well. So I just learned that early on, and I for the most part consistently keep 3 Sundays in advance that are already planned out musically. And it's given out to the appropriate people. All the packets are made. The orchestra has their music. The band has their music. For bulleted purposes, they have what they need for songs to enter, lyrics of the special music. So I wouldn't say that every church maybe has to function that far in advance, but the concept of being prepared, even in those ways, that's way ahead of time, so that there's not last-minute things going on and people are getting things. Because what I learned was also last-minute stuff, mistakes happen. Mm-hmm. Somebody got the wrong music because it was too last-minute. Somebody didn't get their music because it was last-minute. Stuff gets rushed and things don't go as well because the planning wasn't done, the preparation wasn't done.
Right. So, yeah, so... Let me ask you this, Seth. So we have a, I feel like we have a unique philosophy of ministry here at Countryside, where we are singing hymns from 500 years ago, yet we will also incorporate new and fresh songs that we believe are helpful and God-honoring. But let me ask you about sheet music. Is it easier to provide and get all the sheet music for the older songs, the newer songs? What is sort of the, I guess, hindrances or difficulties in that world?
Sure. That's a great question, because the church music world has gone through a lot of changes, even in my time of these last 25, 30 years of serving in churches, where I was brought up in a church that was much more traditional. Hymns were the majority of music, and hymnals and orchestrations were a common product that Nashville was putting out for churches. And a lot of churches in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s still used choir and orchestra as a main style of worship. But then changes happened, and the praise band concept took over, and little by little orchestras and choirs began to be less and less used. And unfortunately, supply and demand kind of kicked in, and the big companies that would provide orchestrations and things stopped doing that as a quality thing, and you started losing quality orchestrations for newer songs that were coming out. And so it began to be harder to find orchestrations to support the newer music that we liked, and so we'd have to wait around or custom order something like that. So that has become more of a challenge. It's a lot easier to find orchestrations and things to use for traditional hymns, because that's been the history of the church music here, at least in my time. Mm-hmm. And so, but I'm hopeful and foresee maybe the pendulum to swing back a little bit, and for churches to realize they're missing utilizing choir and orchestra the way that we use it here in our Sunday services, as a main thing rather than an occasional thing.
Well, every song that we do on Sunday morning, if I'm remembering correctly here, and you correct me on this, but I think there's orchestration for almost everything we do on Sunday morning. Is that right?
So I have to be selective with that, because I want to use our orchestra on everything. I don't want them sitting up there and not being able to participate. And so there are certain songs that we are learning now as a church, even on our Sunday night, something newer, that I'm still waiting for an orchestration, or I've asked somebody to create that orchestration. But that's correct. Our Sunday morning, every song that we do, I want something that has an orchestration currently. And so, yeah, I have to wait sometimes longer than I wish to introduce a new song because the orchestration just hasn't become available yet for our church.
Yeah, let's talk about demos, Seth.
Yeah.
You know, if a church is able, why are demos helpful for music ministry?
Yeah, so I find demos helpful for two reasons. In the preparation of my players and singers, it gives them a map, a roadmap to follow, basically how the song goes. We may tweak it a little bit in our arrangement, may choose to do it a little differently, but it gives the basic flow of that. And so my musicians, it helps them prepare in how to play their part with how this goes. Secondarily, it helps my tech team, who's responsible to mix the sound in the room as well as for our live stream. I want them to have an idea of what the song sounds like or should sound like. And so they're hopefully, as they have control of all these faders of the different orchestra and band instruments, they're trying to reproduce that sound similar to what the demo sounds like. And they're not wondering, is there an oboe? Is there a clarinet? What should that sound like? We try to get demos that include that, so they have an idea and an ear for that sound, again, with the goal to reproduce that for our own congregation to hear it that way, as well as on the live stream mix, people that dial in on the internet to watch our stream. The goal is to help it sound like it should sound. So those demos are helpful, and again, give a map for the tech people as well.
Yeah, do you ever, within that demo realm, do you ever give audio or video recordings of what you guys have done here, or is that typically someone else that has performed the song, or what's the balance on that?
What do you typically do? So we've been in process of creating our own library of our songs, how we do them, the arrangement, the recording, both an audio recording as well as a video recording, both to benefit our congregation. We get asked that all the time. Hey, it'd be nice to have recordings of the music we do on Sundays to listen to throughout the week. And so little by little, we are building our own library of that. But it also has become a helpful tool for my own instruments to now have a recording of exactly how we do the song, and mixed with us being able to make sure all the instruments are heard properly. And so it's a big task, but we are beginning to work on that and develop our own library. Because to be fair, the original demo that comes with the sheet music that we buy, It oftentimes highlights the band instruments, the guitars and drums, but it minimizes some of those orchestra sounds, so they don't exactly hear always how the song sounds with the orchestra in there. And so I want recordings that sound like the way we do the song with all of our instruments. And so we've got a great crew here that are helping post-mix those throughout the week. And again, little by little, we're building up a library of music that we're able to share within our own church context. But the goal is to make that accessible and available to the larger world of music, other churches that might want to learn how we do the songs that we do, as well as just encouragement to listen to the music. I'm biased, but I think we've got a great great selection of both old and new music here. Again, because we strive to do that with getting back to philosophy of music. Early on, the elders, along with Pastor Tom and I, wanted to be a blended style of worship. We didn't want to have a contemporary only or a traditional only and separate our church. We wanted to find a way to have one service that blends those kind of styles of music, and so we can do traditional hymns and contemporary songs with orchestra, with choir, and ideally trying to find the best of the best of what the church has sung for hundreds of thousands of years, as well as what's coming out just in the last few years, and give that to our church as a diet. And those three identical services on Sunday morning, everybody gets the same thing. You don't choose a service based upon that style of worship. That's been a commitment to us, philosophy of music, and we're grateful to do that for our church.
Yeah, so that's the Sunday morning, those three identical services. Then you've got the Sunday evening where the music is different. So we aren't saying that we are offering the traditional service in the morning and the contemporary. You choose one or the other.
Correct.
The philosophy there is we've got the morning service, and that's our corporate worship service, but then we also offer an evening service, which is a completely different sermon and those things, including the music.
And then the music style is more of the typical praise band that a lot of churches use. And again, we're okay with that.
Sure.
But we have prioritized the Sunday morning service to look and feel like we do. It leans a little traditional with the choir and orchestra, but again, we're trying to still have contemporary music and blend that with the traditional hymns, using all of those instruments on all of the songs.
All right, so we sing in the morning services anywhere from probably 4 to 6 songs, depending on if we're doing communion, it's a special music or baptism services or things of that nature. So we've got around that many songs in the morning service. Then back in the evening service, we have at least
usually five or six.
Yeah, yeah, I was gonna say, songs. A handful there. So we're upwards of 10 songs, per Lord's Day that we are singing on Sundays. So talk to me about the importance of lyrics and the presentation of those things. Of course, we have hymnals in the pews and in the seats that we're able to draw from for various songs, but not every song. So talk to me about the lyric world and why that's crucial.
Yeah. So let me play off of that. Yes, we have chosen to have hymnals ever since I was at this church. They always had a hymnal, and it's available for our people to use. But we have found that not everybody is comfortable using that. It doesn't make sense to everybody. And so the lyric presentation is a good way for everybody to have the words and music. But we remind people that the hymnal is there. We always provide the number of the hymnal for those that like to read out of that, people that love to see the parts and be able to harmonize. And occasionally, when it's a new song, I will direct people to use that and try to follow along and see, to help in the learning process of new songs. But we always do lyric presentation for that, and it is just very basic. It's just the words. Not anything flashy going on the screens.
Right.
It's not a sort of a bottom third of lyrics with a live camera shot of what's, and I don't want to knock that, because for special events we do that, but we have found for the typical Sunday to Sunday, it's not needed for the size of space that we're in, that people in the room can see pretty much everywhere in the room without needing the assistance of the sort of the IMAG concept, image magnification. Where there are some larger churches, that larger context, that it really does help bring what's happening on the stage closer, to feel more present with that. And so I don't want to knock that. Mm-hmm. But what we've chosen to do is just the lyrics only are up there to assist people. And so with that process, I'm involved with that because, again, I think it's helpful to make sure you lay out the words on the slides the way they should be sung, mm-hmm. and edited the formatting. And so there has to be a musical mindset. You don't want to just delegate that to some volunteer that is happy to type in lyrics, but they don't think about, there's five words on one line, then the second line has one word, and then the third line goes back to five. That formatting-wise does not look with the quality it should look.
Sure. And so, you're saying there's a formatting. The better the formatting is even a way to help the congregation participate in the worship.
Correct, yes.
Not distract.
Yeah, the words per line should match the way the pacing of the song is sung as well. And so you want to think about the size of the lyric, the formatting of the lyric, to match how you're singing, so that your eyes are naturally moving to the next line when the next phrase of the song is happening. So those are little things, but not everybody thinks about that. And so you want somebody that's a part of the process that is thinking that way intentionally to lay that out. And I should add that that multiple sets of eyes on things like this is always helpful. And if I could just rewind to an earlier conversation, even with the sheet music, when we were putting packets together, my secretary assistant always does that initial step of putting those packets together. But I made it a habit that I always like to come through and always be a second set of eyes on things like that, looking over the music, making sure each part got what I thought they should have had, you know, because mistakes can happen in with these things. And so the same thing happens with lyrics. When you type in a set of lyrics, load songs for a Sunday, the four or five different songs, they get typed in, they get loaded into a library. A second set of eyes, like myself, comes through and then looks at those to make sure that the right arrangement, the right lyrics are there for that. Again, there's different versions of songs. Some start with a chorus, then they go to the verse. And so making sure it's laid out properly ahead of time,
yeah.
So that on the rehearsal, when we get together and rehearse now, the tech guy now becomes that third set of eyes, mm-hmm. that he's going through and making sure now it's matching what I'm singing and leading from the stage. He's able to be that third set of eyes to follow along and practice with us to make sure, again, we haven't missed anything, so that once the service happens, those things aren't a distraction. Because, again, without preparation, it happens too many times that the wrong song got loaded or they forgot to add a verse. And so the guy leading on stage starts singing a verse that the tech guy didn't have in his protocols. And so then it gets quiet all of a sudden in the room, except for the guy singing on stage, and he's like, what just happened?
Right.
Well, that didn't have to happen.
Right.
With the right amount of preparation and the right people signing off on how is this song going to go, and are all the lyrics matching what the director's planning to lead, that's a simple fix with a few extra minutes during the week of preparing, and then also making sure the rehearsal person is there observing that and signing off that, yes, they sang the songs exactly what I have here. So,
yeah, I mean, that goes back to the point that you were making earlier. That's why preparation in advance is really helpful. Maybe it's not the 3-week window that you're talking about, but getting out in front of it not only helps minimize issues with the sheet music and those things, especially if there's several people involved in that, but also here for the lyrics, being able to work through all of these sort of checks and balances to make sure that on that Sunday morning that everything has been edited, proofed, and is ready to go for worship.
Right. And I would just follow up and say that our Sunday night service is probably a lot more familiar and common to what a lot of churches out there that may watch this podcast, that's what they do. And so for those, for our Sunday night service, I typically plan that on the Wednesday of the week and then send it out by Thursday to my players. And what that looks like is again, we make the packets for each of the guitars, the bass, the drums, the piano, keyboard, making sure everybody has the right parts. And then I scan that into a copy or make a PDF of that document. And then I email that out to each of my players. So between Wednesday, Thursday to Sunday, they have their own time to look at it, to know what's expected before we arrive then on Sunday afternoon at 4:30 for rehearsal. That's not the first time they're seeing that packet, that music, having no idea what to expect. I like to give them the heads up on that. I also use Dropbox for our demo recordings, and I load those song demos again on that Wednesday or Thursday once it's planned, and all of my band members have access to that so they can have the sheet music, they have the demo recording several days in advance before the Sunday happens. That's a simple thing that any of these churches out there could institute and do rather than waiting until showing up Sunday at 4:30 and then coming in, hey, what haven't we sung in a while? Hey, yeah, why don't we do that song again? You go scramble and try to find, I can't find the folder of that music, or anybody know where that music went? Well, these things are just, again, it doesn't need to happen that way. A little bit of planning, a little bit of organization and structuring. Everybody knows where the music is. And you can use a digital library to store all that music as well. Again, we do things our way, but there are many options of a way to stay organized and have nowhere all the songs are stored and copies of the songs for each part so that you don't have to scramble in the moment.
Yeah, and I think there's something too on Sunday mornings here. You know, you are helping oversee and shepherd 150 people probably or somewhere around there
with the choir and orchestra.
With the choir in the mix. And then when you come back Sunday evening, well, it's not 150 people, but it's still at least a dozen with whoever you have on stage next to you, and then, of course, the AVL crew that's working as well.
Yep.
So that 3 week or sort of midweek, it is a little different in terms of the amount of maybe people involved.
Sure. Yeah, and that just goes the amount of work to prepare for a Sunday morning.
Yep.
To make sure the choir and orchestra, even everybody having the right amount of copies of music. There's more burden involved in terms of gathering and making copies of things. And so getting a few weeks now in advance of that just is helpful to everybody involved in the process. And so then I would just also finish by saying the tech crew benefits from these things as well. It's not just the band and instruments getting that. The tech crew gets those service orders. They see what's coming. They know how to set up. They know what instruments are going to be so that they now set up microphones and everything, the chairs, the music stands. They have a plan before Sunday morning so that they're not having to scramble on a Sunday morning to say, okay, Seth, what is planned? What instruments are going to be here today? And nobody needs that last minute burden to do that. And so we really try to get out in front of that to help everybody that's involved to make a Sunday morning go seamless. They all need to be on the same page and know what's coming. And so they all are copied on all that information. They have access to see which instruments are scheduled week to week so they can prepare what they need to from the soundboard and what mic channels need run, what mics need plugged in where. And so it really helps everybody be unified as we go into the services on Sunday.
Yeah, that's great. So, Seth, let's talk about rehearsals. I mean, we've mentioned several times that preparation is key. So those are the smaller sort of finer details that help the choir and the orchestra and everybody involved on Sunday morning. But even before we get to the Sunday morning or the Sunday evening, there's still rehearsals. So talk to me sort of about your philosophy of rehearsals or maybe the methodology that you use or something that you've done for the last 25 years here at Countryside.
Sure. Yeah, so again, because we are a choir and orchestra church for Sunday mornings, our choir has a weekly rehearsal on Thursday nights from 7 to 8:30, And that's a pretty consistent rehearsal that helps us prepare not only for the upcoming Sunday, but for several weeks in advance. There's always special events and other things. We typically will run through 5 to 7 songs in a Thursday night as we're preparing. Last night's rehearsal was all focused on Good Friday and Easter music because we're just about 3 weeks out from that. And so and usually those are more special events and the music's a little more demanding. And so we do have a weekly choir rehearsal that prepares for that.
Now, have you always done that? So is that something that you implemented, you know, from week one,
sure,
maybe when you got here, or
yeah,
has it varied? Has it always been once a week? Has it been twice? What does that look like through the years?
Interestingly, when I got to this church in 2001, the choir rehearsal was always on Sunday afternoon from 4 to 5:30. And the reason it was established that way was for enough men to be in the choir. This church had several men that were pilots, and during the week they'd be traveling and couldn't be here. But Sunday, if they took off Sundays for church, it was a way to keep the men here for the rehearsal as well. And so for years, we kept it on those Sunday afternoons. But as the church grew and ministry got busier, Sundays began to be pretty taxing on everybody. And I think the straw that broke the camel's back was when we went to 3 morning services. It became real difficult in a long day for our folks. And so we began looking for ways to, what's another time during the week? And by then the choir had grown to 50 or 60. And so we had enough guys that could still make it through rehearsal. We had less pilots and guys working during the week that could prioritize a weekly rehearsal. So it went back and forth during the years. There were a time we did Wednesday night rehearsal and tried to sync up when our families were already coming up to church for our junior high school ministries, college ministry. We were trying to be real sensitive to not making our people be out multiple nights during the week. And so we tried Wednesday nights for a little while, but that was still a challenging night because some of my choir people are also involved in those other ministries. And for those other ministries to function, they couldn't be at my choir rehearsal. So eventually we moved it to Thursday night, which is not a night that conflicts with other things. And that's where it's been here for I don't know how many years. But again, backing up, it wasn't always that way. Sunday afternoon, it just worked for the church. And so again, this is probably a little snippet of information, but when you're new at a church, best to not come in and just change everything all at once. It's very wise to absorb into the culture of what's going on, why they do what they do, and give it time. Some of those things you don't have to change right away. Style of worship. I can't remember. It might have been 4 or 5 years after Pastor Tom Pennington came before we decided to introduce drums at this church, even though we didn't feel it was an issue. The church previous to us, it was an issue at the church, and they didn't want to use drums, and they had convictions about that. And so we gave it time for the church to understand. Tom taught a worship series for, I think, 10 weeks on what the Bible has to say about music and worship and what the Bible has to say about instruments. And after that, then we presented to our congregation the philosophy of music and worship that the elders all signed off on, which included the openness to those other instruments that had not been used here before. And again, that took years of just preparing our people, understanding. And so that's just a word of, if you come in and there's some ways they do things and things you may not fully agree with and doesn't make sense, you don't have to change all that at once. Give it time. Let the people get to know you, trust you, and take time to teach through things that aren't black and white in Scripture on that. They're more preferential things rather than just say, nah, the Bible doesn't have a problem with drums, so we're using them next week. There's some pride and attitude in that that's not necessary in the ministry. You want to care for your people and your congregation with wisdom. And these things are sensitive things, even though they're preferential. And so you want to work through those patiently.
Yeah, that's helpful. Those are some good thoughts and some helpful wisdom on how to on how to deal with some of those things, especially if you're new, like you're saying.
And music is one of those lightning rod issues in the church that people come in with preconceived ideas or expectations. And when it's not the way they like it or don't like it, it's emotionally charged and driven. And so, yeah, you just want to be wise and careful in those.
So at the rehearsals on Thursday nights now, you said from 7 to 8:30, what are some of the expectations that you have just in terms of time So you guys are, I mean, you meet almost every week throughout the year. I'm sure there's a few weeks where you give everybody a break, but.
Yes, yeah. I'm strongly encouraged to give breaks at times, and we all need it. So yes, there sure. are periodically.
So, yeah, so what are some of the expectations you have just in terms of that time frame and that time and that time you're spending together?
Yeah, so for that time, again, my target range is about 5 to 6 songs of typically what's coming up in the next month of special music that we're doing. If there's a new congregational song that I'm wanting to teach the church, I'll have that as a part of that rehearsal to help I want my choir to know the song well to help me lead it to the congregation. And so I'm pacing usually 15 minutes at the most per song at a rehearsal like that is what I target. Again, some songs we've been doing enough over the years, it doesn't need a full 15 minutes to refresh that. And so most of the time is singing through each of those songs. And I come into rehearsal already having studied and thought through tonight, here's what I want to work on that particular song. I make those notes in my little, preparation sheet of what I want to attempt to go. And part of that is I'm remembered. I'm making mental notes from the previous rehearsal as we sang through a song. Ooh, they don't know that part as well as I thought they did. We need to work on that next time. And so you're assessing from previous rehearsals to know how to prepare for the next rehearsal. But I always show up with a plan on each song, what I want to do. I always want to sing through the whole song at least once. That is just a personal conviction. I love to make sure everybody's, remembering the whole song. But then about 10 minutes of the 15 is focused on really honing in on a section of that song to really polish up, clean up. And so the choir really gets exposed to know where they're missing the notes, maybe missing the rhythm, and to fix that. So
no, yeah, is that something, Seth, that going into... You're saying you're preparing in advance for this rehearsal time. So depending on if you're going to focus in on one aspect of that song, is that because you know that song is challenging, that it may need some fine-tuning and tweaking, that you may need more practice on that section than others? What is it that is necessarily drawing you to, well, we need 8 minutes here and really only 2 minutes on other aspects of the song?
Sure. Yeah, and so typically... with songs, especially choir type music, each arranger, writer of a song has some moments in their song that are real special to them, that are sort of a unique part of the song, that take a little more work. They've rather than the repetitive chorus that once you get to that section of the song, the choir kind of, once they get it once, they don't need to keep working on it because it repeats itself. But last night there were several, I guess, called bridge sections of the song that are very different than the rest of the song. And so the notes are different. There's some key change moments that you don't foresee coming, that you just have to work through what that feels like to train the choir to remember where these notes are going to change on a key change. And oftentimes there's some trickier rhythms that just, with a volunteer choir, certain rhythms are harder to sing than others. And that's just stuff you know about a volunteer choir, but also you learn as a director. If your church has choir, you start to gauge, this song, we are going to struggle with that moment in the song. And sure enough, when you present it and they start singing through it, yep, I could have predicted that. And then every couple of years we redo that song. Since I have a history on that song, I've already circled in my music, this is a moment that's going to take work again to remind them. It wasn't as predictable as you thought. And so you guessed and you guessed wrong. Mm. And so you hit the wrong notes there or you sang the wrong rhythm. And so I have that sort of stuff in my music, my director music that I've remembered. And so I've made markings or I circle that, or the Lord has given me a memory that is just, it's hard to forget when I first taught the choir the song, they always mess this up. It just, I can't get it out of my head. So it's the Lord's blessing and curse in my life that I have some memory that remembers those things. But again, that's the approach that I'm coming in. You can't tackle everything in one song in one night. And so you pace yourself. That's why I introduced all this Good Friday Easter music months in advance. And I have sort of a method to my madness that little by little we're working towards building the confidence so that the week before Good Friday and Easter, I will have prepared them adequately that they can sing these songs with confidence. They don't have to be buried in their music anymore. And that comes from repetition. And that's why I start months in advance on music that way. Repetition is very important when it comes to music. And we can talk about that congregationally in another time. Mm-hmm. But with the choir rehearsing, you've got to repeat sections multiple times in a rehearsal. And therefore, you're not going to sing through the whole song again and again and again. You want to hone in on a section, work it over once, point out what they missed, go back, work it again. Okay, let's do it one more time. Let's do it a third time to really feel like we got it. Okay, now let's move on to the next section. And so you just piecemeal it. And so that's locking things into their memory bank so that it really, the next time you come back to that song in a week, they've already got a better grounding on that song. And it mentally comes back to them musically because the work you put into that. But I also learned that if I try to spend 30 to 45 minutes on one song, you lose a focus with the choir. That's why 15, maybe 20 minutes at the most do I want to spend per song before, okay, we're getting bored of this. It's time for something fresh, something different. And oftentimes you're working with one section at a time. I'm trying to help my guys, the tenor part or the bass part, and the ladies are sitting there sometimes quietly, but they're allowed to visit, you know, amongst themselves. But, you know, before long, you start to lose the energy and focus of what you're trying to get done on that song. And so you got to keep things moving at a pace. And so that's where I feel 15 to 20 minutes per song is sufficient. That lets me get through those four or five songs in a rehearsal. And I always try to preserve about 5 or 10 minutes at the end. We take prayer requests. We do some announcements, praises. We celebrate birthdays once a month and sing. We do things like that. And occasionally there's shepherding moments there that I also do, but from a spiritual shepherding in those rehearsals, what I typically do is as we're singing through songs, again, I prepare to say something from one of the songs. Last night we were singing about change from glory until one day we're with Him perfected, and just taking a moment to, folks, that's what's going on right now. As we're being sanctified in this life, that verse that talks about being changed from glory to glory, the concept of sanctification. And sometimes it's not fun. Sometimes it hurts. It's a painful process, but it's making us more like Christ. And so just interjecting little spiritual moments and reminders, what we're singing matters. It's important. And it's not just about singing right notes and making sure the words are heard, but you're digesting these biblical truths as we're rehearsing those. So rather than having a devotional time or something at the end, I typically try to sprinkle thoughts and making sure they're thinking about what they're singing throughout the rehearsal as we sing song to song. And that's just something I personally have done. I would say that's always done in choir settings. Again, each choir director can choose to do what they want to do. But I have found that helpful to stay into work mode for musical rehearsal. Like, I got an hour and a half with these people and we got a lot to do. And while I value spiritual refreshment and time, there's a time and a place for that. I'd rather interject little nuggets through the rehearsal, but stay into a sort of a work mindset of learning music with spiritual moments along the way.